got me, and baby, I got you. Hey, I got you, baby.
7 minutes after the hour of 12.
I got you, baby.
Now, was this the song that Sonny Bono was singing as he was skiing down the slope before he crashed into that tree?
No.
And became room temperature?
No. Why do you have to go there into the negative? We're talking about happy things like Punxsutawney Phil.
And then
this was the song on Groundhog Day, the movie Groundhog Day, that he kept waking up to.
I know. But then there's Cher, who's always airbrushed. I mean, one more facelift and her face will snap like an old rubber band. Oh, God.
Yeah. Have you ever seen her live, by the way? Have you ever seen her perform?
Never. I would never go to a Cher
She's
concert.
She's fantastic.
God.
First of all, bad A, you know what I mean?
Does she drink Geritol and take Bengay baths?
Listen, youngin', you know.
When people go to see her concert, are there guys, men's men, who actually go see a Cher concert? Come on.
There are men. there are manly men who go there.
Really?
Yes. But they're not straight usually. Uh-huh. But they're
trust me, Cher's time has passed.
It's over. Ages.
She ought to go out in that castle. What is that? The Mohica Castle out in Long Island.
Mohica.
And share that with the schnoz Barbara Streisand. Ohika Castle. There. You know, they could hang out there and reminisce.
Why
and
Ohika
bash
Castle?
Bash Trump. Well, because it's local. It's local. It's out in Long Island.
Okay, because it's a big mansion-y type thing.
Exactly. And a bunch of crooks on that. But anyway, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, these great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com, the Hawk is talking out there. Did you hear Bill Evans?
It's going to rup like a rock. I actually didn't hear Bill's thing.
Well, first off, the Hawk is talking. And any bird-like creature now, I would literally raise a shotgun and I would shoot that bird out of the sky.
What?
Because it reminds me of the Philadelphia criminal eagles.
Yeah.
And once I shoot that eagle out of the sky, a Philadelphia eagle, then all of a sudden you're going to hear the bird as it begins its descent, as it begins to lower itself.
Lower itself.
And then crash and burn. I hate both of these teams. The New England Patriots of the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick. I despise them. I loathe them.
Yeah.
And naturally, the Philadelphia Criminal Eagles, where if you're a Giant fan like I am, you cannot even imagine rooting for the Eagles. Or if you're a Jet fan, rooting for the New England Patriots.
So you're a Giant fan, so you won't root for the Eagles, so you'll root Patriots?
I will not root for the New England Patriots.
What will you do then?
Well, remember, I told you yesterday, I hate everything about Boston. Boston baked beans, Boston
cream really?
Pie.
Oh, my God.
The Boston Red Sox, the Boston Celtics, the
Boston
Harbor, Bruins.
The Tea Party.
Especially the Brady Commons. Bunch and Coach Belichick. Because all they do is cheat.
I agree with you. Remember, you would come on Fox's morning show with me, and we would talk about Brady being the cheater.
That's right.
Every time he was mentioned, we would say cheater. Remember Ben?
With his deflated gonads, remember?
Oh, yeah, I do, but
you don't want to remember that, right?
No, but remember Ben Simino, who used to be the anchor there, he would constantly call him a cheater. Now, where is he?
He's up in Boston, that's right.
Boston.
And he's drunk to Kool-Aid.
He's kissing you-know-what
exactly every
day. And I'm trying to hold myself back from telling those people up there. They've got a scofflaw in town.
Well, I have tied in the annual tradition of Groundhog Day, that Sonny and Cher song, as you had mentioned,
yes.
From the movie Groundhog.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured this. I actually made the connection because Punxsutawney Phil, or whatever the hell that degenerate group that rabble is.
It's Punxsutawney.
Because remember, listen to the rap. Listen to the crowd. They're all drunk. At about 3 o'clock in the morning when it's dark in Punxsutawney, which
fun.
Is about 300 miles away from Philadelphia. But listen to the rabble. This is at 3 o'clock in the morning as they await the arrival of Phil out of his burrow. They're half
in
the bed.
It's an excuse. I mean, it's an excuse to party.
They're drinking from their flask. It's
What's
probably
that,
near
Curtis?
Penn State, you know, Happy Valley with those degenerates. And it looks like a throwback because if you notice, The guys who were the head of the committee, you know, who actually eyeball puncture Tawny Phil, you know, they actually eye fornicate him.
Yeah. Well,
if you notice, it reminds me of Sir Topham Hatt.
Who?
Sir Topham Hatt. You see, you probably wouldn't know that.
I don't know that.
Oh, Thomas the Tank Engine. You know, I had to watch that over and over with first Antony, my oldest son, then Carter, then Hunter. I had to take him to shows. That's right, with Thomas the Tank Engine.
What do you mean? It's like cartoon.
Yeah, but they had human beings dressed up as the engines. Okay. And they'd always have a guy.
I'm childless.
Who performed as Sir Topham Hatt. And he looked like all these guys that you see surrounding Punxsutawney Phil as they're half in the bag with their top hats.
Punxsutawney.
Punxsutawney. And the reason I say Punxsutawney is the one thing they did this year is they played the Eagles theme. That's right, the Philadelphia Criminal Eagles theme. Yes. Listen to this lame song. What is this?
Wait, they say fight you? I always thought it was fly eagles fly.
No. It's like a throwback to the 50s.
All right, I get it. But...
So cornball, but so much like so Pennsylvania from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh. So corny. And apparently, Punxsutawney Phil, it was sunny, and he saw his shadow.
So what does that mean? I always forget.
Well, he returned to his borough, which meant 6 more weeks of winter. 6 more weeks of winter. As all of a sudden, the drunk tank, you know, was coming around, picking up, scraping people off the asphalt, bringing them to the local dryout joint. Because, let's face it, if you live in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, what's the one thing you do? Drink. And drink.
And look forward to Punxsutawney Phil Day.
And drink. And imagine, why am I here? You know, why have I remained in this place that's like a throwback to the 1950s?
I often wonder why people live in Iowa. Why?
Well, there were more there are more pigs than people in Iowa.
Right. Or like, you know, I don't know, Utah. Well, Utah can be nice, I guess. But, yeah, like Iowa and Oklahoma. I mean, horrible.
Flat lines.
Just boring.
No mountains, you know, just
nothing.
Flat.
I mean, like, okay, there's oil, maybe some rich guys there or something like that, but that's it.
And Oki from Finoki, right? Lots of guns.
Lots of guns,
Lots of Native Indians in Oklahoma, that's for sure.
And it's fun to go visit them.
Yeah, but you're not going to find many Native Indians in and around Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Anyway, first off, if there's anybody who's ever attended that rabble, can I hear that rabble again? This was 3 o'clock in the morning.
The rabble rousers.
Well, they're drunk. They're drinking from their flask.
Do you think they start at like midnight? They wake up at midnight to drink, or they're just boozing from like noon the day before?
They live for this. This is the only reason.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, you know, it's kind of cool.
Let's find out anyone has ever attended that, or if they believe like me. It's such a throwback. You're such a curmudgeon to be into that.
I like it. They come out with the hats and the little, you know, the little. Cloaks, and it's very cool.
It's old school. It's very British.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why you like that. You angle file. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. You see, I trust Two-Buck Chuck.
Two-Buck Chuck. That's in that wine?
Yeah, well, I call him Two-Buck Chuck.
Oh, it's Chuck from Staten Island.
That's right. Chuck the Woodchuck.
The one that's dead.
We got to go through this a little bit because Two-Buck Chuck, remember, he is the competitor to the groundhog Punxsutawney Phil. He's a woodchuck at the Staten Island Zoo.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I embraced Two-Buck Chuck because when I was a kid, my mother, we would go pick up my father, who would come on a ship through the Kilvan Cull, the Arthur Kill, over to the port of Newark and Elizabeth. And then they'd be unloading. Used to take them a long time. It wasn't like now. And so we'd pick my dad up in the old Betsy, the 54 Ford station wagon with the white sidewalls and the wood paneling.
Oh, yeah.
And remember, there was no plank, no guinea gang plank then, the Verrazano Bridge. So you had to take...
No, guinea gang plank?
Yeah, well, that's what it was. That's what everybody calls it.
Yeah, you can say anything, can't you?
Well, look, I can always say, hey, I'm part Italian, but that's what my uncles... We used to stop at a White Castle for Belly Busters, Belly Bombers. That's no longer there, about 86th Street in Bay Ridge. And I remember my Uncle Vincenzo would say, hey...
Vincenzo.
That's right, Vincent. He'd look up as they were building the bridge, and he'd say, there goes Brooklyn. It's like everyone's going to move out. He goes, all of our Italian friends, all of our Italian relatives, they're going to be on that plank. And you know what happened? He was right. And then the Gentiles, they would end up moving down to the Jersey Shore, do a hop, skip, and a jump over the Outer Bridge crossing.
Like over to Rumson, that area?
Well, that's the one percenters.
Yes, I love it there.
I'm sorry.
I love it there.
Not Rumson. You know, Tom's River. Next
Tom's
stop.
River. Okay, yeah.
Right, well, Tom's
home
River.
Home of Huddy Park.
Right, but blue-collar working class, right?
Yeah, my people.
And then you had the Jews who would come over from Brooklyn. They'd, mm-hmm. They'd settle in central Staten Island. And next spot would be Marlboro or Lakewood, New Jersey. And then the next spot for all of them would either be the Poconos, the sixth borough of the city of New York, or Florida, Georgia,
yeah.
North Carolina, South Carolina, Arizona, Texas, wherever they were departing to. But that used to be the stages. And I remember the first time I went to the Staten Island Zoo, where Two Buck Chuck lives, all they had were horseshoe crabs. So when the fog would come in and my dad couldn't come to port, he'd have to lay up for a while in the Straits of the Verrazano right before you hit the plank. My mom would say, let's go to the Staten Island Zoo, you know, go pet the horseshoe crabs.
Oh, my God.
That's all
that's
they had
horrifying.
Back then. Horseshoe crabs, which looked like old German Nazi helmets that had washed ashore.
Oh, that's horrifying.
After World War
II. You don't
II.
Understand my fear of sea life. I mean, unless it's dead on a plate, I can't stand looking at that stuff. It freaks me out.
Well, the first crabs. Time I saw them in Ugh. Mass...
Hideous.
Up on the beach, it was Plum Beach.
Oh, my God, I would have lost my mind.
Jamaica Bay, as you're heading towards Sheepshead Bay from Canarsie.
That doesn't happen anymore, does it?
Now, actually, the Chinese,
oh, you always
they
blame the
purloin.
Chinese.
They go into Jamaica Bay late at night. They purloin the few remaining horseshoe crabs. Because it's not like it used to be when I was a kid in the 60s. They were everywhere. Because they believe that
horrifying.
The horseshoe crab helps your libido.
Oh.
It's a part of it.
Look
and
at
so
that.
They nefariously take the horseshoe crabs, which is a violation of federal law. They've
is
been
it?
Locked up. Oh, yeah, because that's a federal preserve.
Okay.
The Jamaica Bay Area.
Okay.
They get locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And like everything, you know, like tusks from elephants.
Right. I didn't realize that I don't equate those crabs with elephant tusks.
I guess the
tusks,
Chinese, but... you know, because they were limited to like one child on the Mao Zedong, now it's two kids, you know, they've had libido problems, you know, so they want to exercise their libido.
They eat it or what do they do with it?
They make a soup out of it.
Oh.
That's what I understand, a soup.
Oh,
and then they really think that it helps their libido. In fact, if anybody actually grew up and you remember the horseshoe crabs, they used to be everywhere. South Beach in Staten Island, Plum Beach, Jamaica Bay, Howard Beach, Beach Channel. They used to be everywhere.
Oh, my God.
And now try to find them. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. So Two Buck Chuck was without the mayor. Mayor has been banned. He is not permitted to come to the Staten Island.
He's been banned? No, I thought he had the opportunity to be able to go.
No.
He just said, his people are saying,
no,
he's very busy.
No, he's banned because he
president.
Was never indicted for the murder of what was Two Buck Chuck's daughter, Charlotte.
Well, it was manslaughter, really.
No, it was murder.
Yeah, I don't think he went there with intention.
Well, listen to the DA today who spoke. Who is McMahon, the ambulance chaser. That's what he used to do. And he said specifically why the mayor was not there.
There were rumors of a crime here a few years ago. I've got detectives stationed throughout these proceedings.
No, he's serious, because the mayor is not permitted there any longer to his discredit.
I thought that was one of the funniest things. Actually, probably the only funny thing in his entire tenure so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, but D.A. Dan Donovan at the time would not impanel a grand jury and indict then-Mayor de Blasio.
Look, to be indicted for murder, you have to have, don't you have to have...
There was documentary
like
evidence.
First...
He killed a female.
He didn't
his
throw
daughter,
it down. It
Charlotte.
Jumped out of his... I mean, that was manslaughter.
No.
He didn't take care of it.
No. You don't know. The insides of Charlotte were completely broken.
Like he
she
beat
had
her
internal,
before?
Yeah, damn right.
Good God.
Damn right.
Good God.
Shame on you, Dan
Donovan. What kind of man do we have running our city?
1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go. It's Dan who is calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Danny?
Dan.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Listen, Curtis, you mentioning the horseshoe crabs brought back some good memories of me as a child growing up at the Raritan Bay in South Amboy. You know, I remember certain times of the year when those things were laying their eggs, there would be literally tens of thousands of those horseshoe crabs.
Oh, yeah. And remember, that was at a time where if you dove into the Arthur Kill, the Kill Van Cull, which led to Perth Amboy and Tottenville, Tottenville on the Staten Island side, Perth Amboy on the Jersey side. Actually, if you teed up a golf ball, you could actually hit it from Tottenville over to Perth Amboy. But remember, Dan, if you as a human being put your swimming trunks on and dived in there, you'd incinerate.
This is true. You would definitely have some issues if you were able to make it out of that water. At that
right.
Time.
Why?
I remember the
so toxic
Indian crying at that time with the polluted waters. I mean, there was foam, there was dead fish. That's when there was pollution.
Yeah.
Thank God it's cleaned up. It's
so wait, so what happened to all the horseshoe crabs? If it's
from what I understand,
much better now.
Harvesting them for fertilizer and dog food. Because I go down there with my kids. I moved out of Monmouth County now. I take my kids up there sometimes. You're lucky to even find a dead one. It's a shame.
Yeah, but Dan, you see, you're not Chinese. If you were Chinese and you were from 8th Avenue in Brooklyn that has become Little Chinatown, you will see if you went late at night, right near Floyd Bennett Field, Jamaica Bay, there's certain coves there, and they're in their little rowboats. And they're harvesting the few remaining horseshoe crabs and then shipping them back to Red China.
That's
or
illegal.
Processing
them.
It is very illegal. There's huge fines. You can be arrested for that because that's a federal preserve. But they actually believe, forget the Viagra, forget the Cialis, forget taking shots in your three-piece set that'll make you be Woody Woodpecker. If you make a soup out of horseshoe crab, your libido will last forever.
So if we would go down into, you know, let's say the Canal Street area where all those, you know, the Chinatown area, where
Fuxing.
They have all those things sitting outside, all those hideous looking
Fuxing,
evil little creatures.
A.K.A. Flushing. No, you'll never see them on display.
You won't.
You'll go in the back room.
And then they'll.
And you pay a premium price. And they guarantee you that you won't have to worry about being limited to one child. Two children, which is now the norm in Red China, but you'll be procreating like if you were a member of the Jewish Orthodox community, where there'll be like 12 or more of you. So naturally, all of a sudden, the Chinese say, yeah, I'm for that.
Hmm.
But if you give it to you or me, and you say, horseshoe crab, you know, it's good for your libido, you look at it and say, what are you talking about? Get out of here. Anyway, up next.
That's horrific.
Want to find out from all of you, will this particular Super Bowl Sunday require you to sit on your tuchus and watch the pre-shows?
Snore.
The game or the post-game analysis? Well, because so many of you have bailed out of watching the NFL or limited the times you watch, will this affect what you do this Sunday? 1-800-848-WABC. But right now, let's get our news headlines and updates from Lisa Ritchie.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Fly, 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 or fight?
Fight.
It sounds like they're saying fly.
No. Fight because.
I get it. I get fight.
A bunch of thugs and
eagles
criminals.
Eagles do fly.
The Philadelphia, as I call them, Eagles. And this is their theme song. Which is like, I'm expecting Ronald Reagan to come out in that Newt Romney film that he made, many years before his presidency. So corny.
It sounds like when you're driving around college campuses at freshman year and you see the girls and they're doing their sorority, you know, rushing their sororities and they sing these dopey songs out on the lawn. That's what it sounds like.
Now, is that when they're half in the bag, when they're all ginned up?
I don't know. I didn't rush.
Oh, you
No, I was not in a sorority. No, the only reason I wasn't was because I didn't know that you had to do it, like sign up before school started.
I was
really mad at my mom for that.
So I want to take a litmus test of our many viewers here. Obviously, we have no stake in this Super Bowl. Unless you live in the southern part of New Jersey and Pennsylvania, because you can hear us, and you may well have been tried and true Philadelphia Eagle fans. If you're a New England Patriot, Brady Bunch, Coach Belichick fan, it's probably not because you've always been a Patriot fan, but rather whatever Trump is you are, because you're clones of Trump. So he loves the Patriots. He loves their owner, Kraft. He loves Brady. That's his number one NFL football team. So that's probably why you...
Like my guy friends out on Long Island who love the Jets, you're saying that because they also love Trump, that now they will be like, they're going to be okay rooting for the...
Hey, I want to ask about that. Would they be rooting for Brady and the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick because it is Trump's favorite team? Or will they just not be watching, or maybe not as much as they oftentimes would in the Super Bowl, unrelated to the fact that I, like so many of you, if you're a Giant fan, you hate the Eagles. If you're a Jet fan, you hate the Patriots. But just because of all the mishigash, the craziness that started a year ago with Colin Kaepernick, who had performed in the Super Bowl, one that I attended in the Superdome in New Orleans. Remember when the lights went out for 45 minutes?
Yep.
And the Baltimore Ravens were able to catch their breath and win the Super Bowl, although Kaepernick in that game was magnificent.
Kaepernick.
Whatever. But then his skills depleted. But then this year, every other weekend, somebody was taking a knee. They were sitting on their tukas. They were holding hands, which was not at all manly. They were doing a lot of things that really pissed the hell out of the heartland, especially, but a lot of other NFL fans who said, hey, look, show respect. If you're not going to come out, put your hand over your heart, shut your mouth, stand, and for the Pledge of Allegiance, the national anthem, show respect, then just stay in the clubhouse. Don't come out. Stay in there, sit on your tukas, and then when it's over, then you come out.
Yeah.
You come out to the sideline.
I saw a lot of friends on Facebook who are huge football fans, and they said, no way, that's it, we're done.
Well, let's find out from our many listeners. You intend on watching the Super Bowl? For some of you, you're such fanatics, you'll start watching 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, Saturday going into Sunday with all the pre shows that they have, in which they milk the advertising dollars, right until maybe the end? Where the whistle is finally blown and it's the end of the game. It should be about 11 o'clock, 11:30 in some instances. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Bobby, who's calling from Westchester. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Bobby?
Hello, Curtis. Hello, Juliet.
Hello, Bobby.
I just wanted to tell you guys we're having a Super Bowl party, but no game.
What are you guys going to do?
Get together, eat, drink, party, but no TV.
I like it.
I can't do it. I would not watch. I didn't watch a football game all season. I will root for the Patriots because nobody on that team kneels down. They all stand. So, but as far as watching the game, no. No more.
All right. Now, Bobby, you do understand why the Patriots stand, because their owner, Bob Kraft, is the closest friend of the NFL owners that Donald Trump has, other than Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys. And Kraft has made it well known everybody stands because he also wants a favor, Bobby. He claims that Vladimir Putin in 2005, on a visit that Kraft made to Moscow, looked at his Super Bowl ring, of which he has many. I think he's got, what, six now? Six Super Bowl rings?
Six, Curtis, right. Six, yeah.
But he had on one of them. I'm not sure which Super Bowl victory ring it was. And Putin said, hey, can I see that ring? You know, he said in Russian, and then it was translated. Mm-hmm. So Kraft said, absolutely. And Putin looked at it, put it on his finger, and walked away.
Did that really happen?
Yeah.
Is this just like some sort of urban legend?
I don't know if that really happened, well, guys. And come on, I don't care what the reason
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but you see, Kraft.
They don't kneel down. That's the thing I care
about. No, understood.
But,
that's right, Bobby.
But Kraft
get him, Bobby.
Complained publicly about that. The ring was never returned. He appealed to Donald Trump, especially after he became president, and said, could you do something? I mean, I really want that ring back.
So now it's all making sense. That's what the meetings were about.
You mean that's what Russian collusion is?
We're just trying to get that
damn
ring back.
This reminds me when I was a kid. You know, you had your first Schwinn bicycle. You're in the park. I was in Seaview Park. I went to see my cousin Lenny Beans Bianchino play Little League Baseball center field for Harry's Shoe Store.
Lenny Beans?
Lenny Beans Bianchino. He's a real shorty short.
Do you call him Beans?
Yeah, Beans. Beansy.
Beansy.
And so this kid came up to me, much older than me, said, hey, could I take a ride on your bike? And you know me, I'm naive at that. Yeah, sure, take a ride. My cousin sees him get on my Schwinn, Big Chief bicycle. He grabs a bat out of the bat rack. He starts hitting him, and he says, hey, you gavon, get the hell off that bike. Because he knew what he was going to do, steal the bike. He was going to steal the bike.
How does he know?
because he knew Crazy Sal at the time. He knew what Crazy Sal was going to do. But Crazy Sal was so nice, so smooth. If I were a diabetic, I would have had insulin shot. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Steve in Rockland County. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Steve?
How are you guys?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm okay, Juliet. You know, I just want to tell you that I don't even know if you remember, but when Jeanine Pirro had that whole speeding incident, we had a little discussion about that.
Did we fight about it?
We didn't fight about it. I just suggested that, you know, well, it's just that I had an ailing senior citizen in my car recently, and I put my blinkers on when I was driving fast.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm not going to watch this game.
And why?
Not for the reason you might think.
Okay.
Because I knew somebody who was intimately involved with the doctor in Pittsburgh who discovered this whole chronic, the CTE thing.
Yeah, the result of concussions.
Right, with Mike Webster. And, you know, I'll tell you that Robert Kraft was part of the whole conspiracy to destroy this guy's career.
Oh, I believe it.
Deported. Wait, and have him deported. So when I realized that the National Football League are the tobacco companies of traumatic brain injury, it was easy for me to turn my back completely on the NFL. And my father and Wellington Mara were friends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, and I'm talking about when Wellington Mara was a ball boy on the sideline, my father knew him from the neighborhood.
Well, there's no doubt that there's been collusion amongst NFL owners.
Right,
100%.
Let's just remember something, Curtis. Collusion happens between professional sports teams' owners, and conspiracy to commit treason happens when you're the president of the United States, okay?
No, understood, but let's face it.
I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
I never heard of any of the NFL owners, and there have been some rebels. Like, I remember the old Al Davis from the NFL. Everybody hated him because he was a rebel originally.
Wait, who was he? Al Davis was the
Oakland
the owner
Raiders.
Of, okay, yeah.
Owner, CEO.
Wasn't he really, he always dressed very flashy?
He dressed sort of Elvis style.
Yeah, that's okay. Okay.
And he was originally from Erasmus High School in Brooklyn. But no, there have been no owners who have said, hey, we're responsible for this. We really have to address the growing number of cases that are found as a result of autopsies that are done of former NFL players who have died.
Well, we've heard Mark Gastineau. He's got a commercial on this station.
Oh, my God. And no, I would not use him as
Why?
An example.
Why not?
He's popped pills. He's been a dope fiend.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh,
well,
he says so. You know, on the air, he's being honest. But I would not use him as an example because he was very self-abusive. I would use, like Webster, our caller had mentioned, Westchester, who really suffered, and his wife was made fun of. She was, you know, because everybody loves football in Pittsburgh, you know, Steel City. And naturally, they said, you're trying to destroy our game. Out of any city in America, the most fanatical fans, they'll travel to the ends of the earth, are the Pittsburgh Steelers fans, you know, with their towels, their victory
terrible towels.
Right. And it's really horrible what they did to that wife and the children who survived Webster's death.
Oh, God.
Horrible. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. To the phones we go, Juliet Huddy. It's Louie from Elizabeth. Welcome to WABC. Lou?
Hey, Lou.
Forget about it. We love you, Curtis. Saying a big how you doing from Sammy's Cafe in Elizabeth. We enjoy your show. You're a funny guy. You amuse us. But we will not be watching the football game. We haven't watched football in over 2 years. We're going to be with Elizabeth Police Finest on Sunday having a little barbecue. And we'll be watching cartoons.
Watching cartoons on the Cartoon Network?
On the Cartoon Network. You're a funny guy, Curtis. Forget about it. When you're coming over here on a Trump train, have some espressos with us.
Well, I tell you what. I got to visit Hillside soon, which is between Newark and Elizabeth.
I guess I don't get an invite.
No, you first of all, you wouldn't want to go. I'm going to South Orange Avenue first in the belly of the beast in Newark.
I like bellies of
beasts.
Then
cut through Hillside, which is where Phil Rizzuto used to live with
his
wife.
The money store.
guy. And then in Elizabeth, remember where that terrorist, the Chelsea terrorist, came from when he was selling fried chicken at that halal joint, remember?
Vigilante, Curtis.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
That's what the world is today. Hey. The cell appeals are at an all-time high.
7 minutes after the hour of the sky. And ladies and gentlemen, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided for this broadcast by NJADiet.com. Boy, the hawk is talking out there. It's cold. It's, well, overnight, it's going to be cold like it is in Mother Russia. And once again, we're talking Russia. Because of the release of this House Intelligence Memo, and I'll try to undo the confusion.
Thank you, because there is a lot of it.
Because, quite frankly, unless you're an inside the ballpark player, this is very difficult to understand. This is sort of like when you listen to WFAN and some fan calls up one of the shows and starts talking analytics.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember in the Florida League, Jose, you know, and you're like, what the hell are they? Now, the cognoscenti, they're like all into it.
Ooh, but I like that word, Curtis.
Yeah, but average everyday residents, voters, are not really going to understand this because it is so heavy in terms of what it is that you have to understand in order to get the four pages that have been dropped by Nunes's staff member. Now, remember, Nunes himself is the chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence.
He's a good buddy and a big supporter of the president.
Right.
He's been a very, very strong ally.
Right. So he is the chairman, and his Democratic co-chairman of the minority is Adam Schiff. And we've seen them like Heckle and Jekyll on TV back and forth. But Devin Nunes recused himself like Sessions did from this investigation. So his staff member wrote the memo, the four pages. And then they were asked, well, did the White House help you? Did you bring this to the White House? And they wouldn't answer that question. They took the fifth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I, like almost everyone else, wants to also see the minority report, the Democrats' memo of the same House intelligence members.
Because the Democrats are saying, no, 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 the Republicans have cherry-picked the information that's going to make them look good or their argument look good. So I don't understand why the Democrats aren't releasing theirs.
Let me see if I can connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
The first point that the Republican memo says is that the Steele dossier, and remember, that's the one that attracted our attention because we found out that a British agent, part of a private company,
right,
that first had been contracted by Republicans to derail the Trump presidential campaign in the primaries. And then, naturally, they gave that up when it became a fait accompli that he was the Republican candidate at the convention in Cleveland. And then, naturally, the information was offered to Hillary and Podesta. They snapped it up for 150 Gs. So this Steele dossier, the most titillating part of it, was the golden shower suggestion that Trump was involved in this on a stay that he had in Moscow years before. And it is an essential part of all three renewal FISA applications. And this is that special court based on the fact of terrorist acts that were committed pre-9/11 and obviously post-9/11.
Right.
And it involves not the president, not Lieutenant General Flynn, not any other member or former member of the campaign or the White House now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those applications were against Carter Page. Now, who is Carter Page? Carter Page is not necessarily a name that sticks out. You know, it's not like, oh, Manafort, okay, I get that.
Right.
Donald Trump Jr., okay. Jared Kushner, I understand that.
He's a background player.
Well, he's a background player.
To the public.
But he served as a foreign policy advisor to Trump's presidential campaign. And according to all, he was very pro that if, in fact, Donald Trump were to become president, we should change direction in terms of no longer having a bad relationship with Putin like Hillary would have had, inherited from Barack Obama. This is what he was best known for. As you know, in any kind of administration, you have the pro segment, the con segment.
Didn't he also have business dealings, though, with the Kremlin? Wasn't he very pro-Kremlin?
Yeah, well, that's what he was accused of, that, in fact, he would go back and forth to Russia, and he was enthusiastic about doing business with them. But there are other Americans who do business with the Russians.
Yeah, but, you know, when you have the president's ear, it kind of changes the game.
Okay, so all of a sudden, a series of news reports begin to appear describing Carter Page's links to Russia and Putin's government. So Page stepped down from his role in the Trump campaign.
Right.
Page then became the focus of the FBI, the CIA, a number of intelligence agencies. And that's when they went for the FISA warrant. As they said, we got to keep an eye on this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he was no longer part of the Trump campaign, obviously he never was a part of the administration once Donald Trump was elected president. And he was the only American who was directly targeted with that FISA warrant. And then every 90 days, it was repeated. So this is the basis, or at least the start out of the memo. Then, naturally, the infamous Andrew McCabe is mentioned here, the deputy FBI director.
Who just stepped down.
Right, who was Comey's homeboy.
And Comey is tweeting about him constantly.
Right, and obviously Republicans are saying, you see, this is why McCabe just recently stepped down, because he wasn't supposed to retire until March. But that's why, to beat this drop of the memo, because he's implicated as confirming that no FISA warrant would have been sought from the FISA court without the Steele dossier information. And clearly, we know that a lot of the dossier information was bogus, unless you believe this crazy Brit, you know, this former intelligence guy all of his allegations.
Yeah, it was a way to tarnish Donald Trump as he is making his prelude to a presidency.
And the DOJ official who had met with Steele, this is the other important thing, because Steele became a primary contributor.
Right, and you're talking about Orr, the Department of Justice guy.
In the summer of 2016, and relayed to the DOJ information about Steele's bias. So here's a DOJ official who is saying, we shouldn't deal with this guy. He's biased.
Right.
Guy hates Trump, hates the Trump campaign.
Yeah, he said that he was desperate. The Steele guy says he was desperate that Donald Trump not get elected president and was passionate about him not becoming president.
And then naturally, the Intelligence Committee is upset, and rightfully so, because the FBI and the Justice Department mounted months-long campaigns to keep the information out from under the nose of the House Intelligence Committee hands. Only the threat of contempt charges and other forms of pressure forced the FBI and Justice Department to give up the material. So if you look at this from a Republican perspective, you say, aha, you know, abuse of power, you saw it.
They're suggesting the Department of Justice and the FBI is corrupt. They're two corrupt entities.
Well, I believe that. It has nothing to do with this.
Weaponized.
I don't trust the FBI. I don't trust the Department of Justice because they all have their biases. We're acting as if you're an FBI agent. No bias whatsoever. You know, you're oblivious. You're impervious to having any biases. Well, let's just think of that lead investigative agent and his gumada on the side and all the texts they had back and forth. Not only making fun of Trump, but making pejorative remarks about
Trump.
But again,
there are a lot of people that were involved in this. There were a lot of cogs in the wheel. It wasn't just a tiny little group, if we're to believe what the Republicans are saying. It just seems so outrageous that there's such a mass conspiracy, you know, involving the Department of Justice, the FBI, and many of their employees. I don't know. It just doesn't.
Well,
it doesn't add
that's,
up.
Why were we told we shouldn't have access to this? Who are the ones who were telling us it would jeopardize national security?
Well, like I said,
the Department of Justice and FBI. How does
strategies
how does this jeopardize national security?
Well, we don't know that it has yet.
Of course it hasn't. It's basic information. We knew Carter Page was going back and forth to Russia before he joined the Trump campaign.
So then, what are you saying? Why was this a to do?
Nothing that I see in this four pages that in any way, shape, or form jeopardizes the security of the United States and the confidentiality that the FBI and the Department of Justice need to keep with their sources.
That they should have just said, yeah, let's let it out, no problem, no big
deal. Let it all out. Let the Democrats let out their four-page memo. In fact, let the entire report out, not just four pages, which is a summation, based on the staff member of Nunes. You know, he wrote this. But let it all out.
I want to
know what's going on.
I'm curious to hear what our listeners have to say about this. Because this was a lot, you know, Donald Trump and the White House made a big to-do about this. Is it as explosive now that you're being able to read it and hear about it? Is it as explosive as it was sort of touted?
I don't have any problem with being a warrant in order to monitor Carter Page's phone and cell phone and email communications, because let's face it, he was very pro-Russian. He wanted to do business with the Russians. And he had a history of going back and forth to Russia prior to joining the Trump campaign as one of his advisors.
That makes sense. You had relationships with Russian officials and Russian, you know, oligarchs and billionaires. You're obviously going to have, you know, some of that spill over into your relationship with Donald Trump.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, there's nothing in this memo that rocks my world and says, oh, my God. Now, do I trust the FBI on a personal level? No. Do I trust the Department of Justice? No.
Do we want a relationship with Russia? I mean, I think that's the question. Do we want to have a trustworthy, bad-handing relationship
The president,
Vladimir
all throughout
Putin.
The campaign, was telling law and order Republicans, who typically would have been anti-Russia in the Cold War, I want to open up relations. I don't want to vilify Putin. He was very honest about that. And apparently it didn't deter people from voting for him because he became president over Hillary, who wanted to renew the Cold War. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Danny, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Danny?
Good afternoon. I don't know if you've actually taken the time to read the entire thing, but best I can tell, and you know, I'm usually defend the president. A basic National Enquirer piece of paper prepared and paid for by Hillary Rodham Clinton's campaign was presented
Stop. Who first contracted for this dossier, Danny?
A long time ago.
Who first contracted for this dossier during the Republican primary campaign?
One of his opponents at some point contacted
Marco Rubio.
Okay, we don't know how far along that was before. Let me get to the gist of the matter. It was paid for by the DNC. It was presented before a FISA judge as an intelligence document from another agency. They made no reference to that judge that it was a political piece. The judge thought it was intelligence. Andrew McCabe said it was the only thing they submitted to get a warrant. The only thing. So even though they were looking at this guy, who, by the way, was a officer in the United States Navy, the guy Page, Carter. He's a businessman. They go back and forth. He was a naval officer before we stain his reputation further. The only thing that was submitted before the secret court was the dossier. I'll say it again. The only thing. They dressed it up and acted like it was an intelligence piece from a foreign government. This is one of the biggest scandals you've ever heard of.
Yeah, but what I said, this is Carter Page. This is not surveilling the president.
Carter Page was a naval officer. That's right.
He was a naval officer.
He's an American citizen.
He was pro-Russia, right?
He's pro-business.
He wasn't traveling to other countries to do business. He was traveling back and forth to Russia.
Curtis, Podesky has billions
what
of dollars.
What the hell? What are you so upset that Carter Page... Well, that they had a tap on his phone and they were looking at his emails.
They got a tap on his phone for one reason. Anything he ever did in his life did not raise any suspicion or was presented.
Of course it raised suspicion.
It was not presented.
He went over on Russian state television on a regular basis and embraced the Russians. Why wouldn't we?
Whatever he had done previously, it was not presented before a judge. They didn't say, we've been looking at this guy for 3 years. This is what he's been up to. The only thing they presented to the judge. The only
okay. thing. Okay. So do you think
this?
You think maybe the judge should have investigated Marco Rubio, who first funded the dossier?
You're talking about 18 months earlier.
I'm asking you because you perpetuate this lie that it was just Podesta and Hillary. You refuse to acknowledge that this dossier was paid for initially by members of the RNC who were trying to derail the Trump candidacy.
The FBI cannot be handed a political document from Rubio or anyone else without doing their own paperwork, and they said they knew it was false, and they presented it to a judge.
And you want to blow all of this up over Carter Page.
I haven't seen anything.
This is not surveillance of the president.
I haven't seen anything.
This is not surveillance of General Kelly or Mad Dog Mattis or anyone else in the administration. Carter Page, who had already left the Trump campaign because he recognized that it would sully the campaign. Carter Page. That's the best they can do. Carter Page. And it ain't Jimmy Carter. That might have gotten my attention. 1-800-848-WABC, because we know he's negative towards the Russians. Remember Jimmy Carter?
Yes, he was on
with Brezhnev. Mm-hmm. We boycotted the
Understandable.
Olympics. There was the grain embargo because of the invasion of Afghanistan.
Yes.
1-800-848-9222.
Then what I saw and what I believe happened could go on in perpetuity and we become a banana republic. What this is earth shaking and it does go deeper than Watergate, and that memo doesn't
deeper
answer at all
Watergate.
By any means.
How is it deeper than Watergate?
Deeper than Watergate. And how is it deeper? Because the FBI and the DOJ, by the information that I have observed and the testimony that I have, analyzed from listening to and questioning multiple members of the FBI and the DOJ, tells me that the FBI and DOJ have been weaponized.
That was Congressman Stephen King from Iowa, where there are more pigs than people, said it was worse than Watergate.
So is any of this illegal? Any of the things that they have done or being accused of doing illegal?
Well, that's why my suggestion is we have a special prosecutor to investigate this that is separate from Mueller. This way this can be fully vetted out because the Democrats are going to deny it. The Republicans, like King, are saying it's worse than Watergate. I'm a child of the Watergate era. I don't see how it's worse than Watergate that they did surveillance on Carter Page. But, hey, let it be fully vetted out.
Well, first of all, I don't know why we're even talking about this until we have the other memos, the Schiff memo, the FISA warrant, the applications, all that information. Then we can, you know, look at this reasonably. Right now, it's one side's one document.
Let's go
a four page document.
Let's go to Dave from Orange. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Dave,
hi. How are you, Mr. Sliwa?
Oh, I'm feeling good. Feeling good.
Yeah.
Good. Great to hear. I won't waste your time. It's just a comment that there is a difference between a person as an American citizen that has business interest in a nation and being that nation's agent. So if someone has business interest as a global economy, the right of the United States to go ahead and monitor his personal conversations, doesn't that cross a line somewhere?
Well, it depends on what his purpose in going back and forth to Russia was. Many have said that he was pro-Russian, supported their contention against the United States. If he didn't do anything wrong, Dave, then what are we
Dave is saying, then why would he be spied
upon? Yeah, but I'm saying if there was nothing on those taps that indicated he was doing anything wrong,
but he's saying there shouldn't have been taps in the first place.
Well, you're going to determine that? I'm going to determine that?
Well, I can't determine my checkbook, so why would I be determining this? No.
I mean, you realize how many wiretaps are done each and every day in this country to American citizens who just have conversations with people overseas?
I think it's the link, and I hate this word, but I'm going to use it anyway, the optics of, you know, and Dave, agree with me on this or not, but the optics of a man who goes back and forth to Russia, which is a country that has, you know, with a leader that has not exactly been pro-United States, to say the least. And then this man comes back and forth, this American businessman, and then he has dealings with Donald Trump, who's now running for president.
Right. What's wrong with just putting him under surveillance if he hasn't done anything wrong, if there's nothing
on the taps? I kind of thought that's what the FBI always did.
Sure.
Just assume that kind of happened.
I mean, Dave, you're not at all curious to see if, in fact, Carter Page was doing the double deal?
Well, my...
Of course you're curious. I'm curious.
Well, who do we set up as the arbitrator?
Well, that's why. That's why the Curtis Sliwa approach is you appoint another special prosecutor to look into these allegations.
Because that's working out so well.
While Mueller is doing his investigation. And again, Donald Trump is responsible for a lot of this. Dave, as much as you would like to give him cover, a lot of these decisions were made by Donald Trump that were not at all helpful to his campaign in terms of dealing with the Russians, nor his son-in-law suggesting to the Russian ambassador that they set up a communications room in the Russian embassy in Washington. And how did we find out about that? Because Kushner was on the phone with Kislyak, and we were tapping Kislyak at the time. I mean, I am definitely, like, thrown by that. Like, Kushner, what did you need to set up a communication center in the Russian embassy so you would be protected from American intelligence agencies? And you trusted the Russians?
That's, yeah.
You're either naive or you're very nefarious.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Juliet Huddy in the house.
Hello, Curtis. I'm so glad that when people ask you how you're doing, you actually say that you're feeling well. You're
oh,
good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What a
really
recovery.
Happy to hear that.
What a recovery. But I want to tap into your expertise because you've been a figure on talk TV for many, many years, both at a local level when I first met you and would join you Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays on Good Day Early Call New York. At like 4:45 to 5.
Horrifying.
Before that, it was Fox and Friends. It was as a guest on O'Reilly. And then you would make other appearances all during your career in which you would be the inquisitor, the interviewer, the hostess of the program. And I don't know what's happened of late, but I remember in the past, you know, a guest might get all bent out of shape, take their microphone off and storm off.
I love it when that happens.
But,
it's the best.
You know, they have a fit, or maybe they don't want to answer a question, or, you know, they thought that it was an agreed-upon interview, you know, between their publicist and the producer.
Yeah, and God forbid you ask about their girlfriend, and they, yeah.
Right.
Jessica Alba.
Or they do a Barbara Streisand, and they're not pleased with the lighting. You know, they want a softer lighting, and say, oh, that's it, I'm
yes,
out of here.
Right.
Okay, that I get, because they're all prima donnas, and they think the world rotates around them. But normally interviewers, whether they come at it from a left-wing perspective, right-wing perspective, whether it's PBS or whether it's Fox News Channel, you've invited in this guest.
Right.
It's not a long interview. These interviews are not that long. You know, it's not like an hour special. It's, it's normally what, max?
Like 4 minutes.
Right,
sometimes it's six.
Right. So it's going to be a short interview. But I've noticed now there's this tendency... We're going to cut off your interview and throw you out.
So in the past, I think I remember cutting somebody's mic because it was one of the situations, you know, the interviews where I'm in the middle and then you see the one person on one side. You know, it's like the little three boxes we call it.
Oh, the Hollywood Squares.
Yeah, the Hollywood Squares. There's one, you know, Republican and one Democrat. And they start arguing with each other and then you can't get either one to shut up. So I just say, just cut their mics. I did that or maybe somebody else. But I mean, that was a common occurrence and it still is a common occurrence.
Well, that happened to me many times when I was a guest on HN. You know, they would cut off my microphones because I realized six guests. We only have like 8 minutes.
You well, got to get your, you got to get your word.
Right.
Exactly.
So I understand that.
Yeah.
Lowering that.
Mm-hmm.
Got that. But remember what Jake Tapper did in that interview he had with Stephen Miller? It was a few Sundays ago.
It was an ugly interview.
Well, in fact, let's go back
in a good way.
The audio tape.
Jake, the reason why I want to talk about the president's experiences, what I've seen with him traveling to meet dozens of foreign leaders, with his incredible work.
Okay, you're not answering the questions.
No,
I understand.
You have 24 hours a day of anti-Trump material.
You're
not going to give 3 minutes for the American people to hear
it.
The real experience of Donald Trump.
There's one viewer that you care about right now, and you're being obsequious, being a factotum in order to please him. Okay.
And I think I've
wasted enough of my viewers' time.
You know
Thank
who I
you,
care
Stephen.
About?
As Republicans,
hey,
lawmakers call for Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign in a major reversal.
So all of that was fair. both Stephen Miller defending his position. He's a spokesperson for the White House.
But if he's brought on a show, you're told what the topic of the segment is going to be. You really shouldn't filibuster and talk about something else. I'm not saying it because it's anti-Donald Trump or it.
Right, but that happens all the time. It's your job as the host of the hostess
to rein it in.
And if you want to get argumentative, that's fine too. But in this case, Tapper got frustrated. He had to realize that Stephen Miller was there for a purpose to represent the president. He wasn't going to diss the president.
No, he doesn't diss it, but answer.
That would be a pink slip for
right.
him. He was also in a precarious position because of the publication of Fire and Fury, which mm-hmm. focused on his mentor, Steve Bannon. So he had to let everyone know, hey, I'm not a Bannonite, you know, and he clearly made that clear. He just disparaged Bannon. But he also had his own agenda. So they had a spirited discussion. I don't mind.
I do mind that, though. And I don't know that I would have just ended the interview, but it is when you've invited a guest to come on and they refuse to answer your questions and they literally just sit there and they will just continue, as Stephen Miller did, just continue to talk, have his narrative. That, you know,
well,
Stephen Miller was right because
difference.
There is 24 hours that CNN
this
has to rip on Trump.
This
that's for sure.
This is the difference. If this were an actor or an actress coming on to promote a film and they were asked a question that they were unhappy with and they did a spin, whoever the host or hostess were, they would try to get to it. They'd come around. It's like Jimmy Kimmel the other night, remember, with
Stormy Daniels.
With the big bazoonies. She was being as evasive as any guest could possibly be, and he kept trying to work around it to get her to answer a question. But it was not done in a super adversarial way. When I'm listening to Jake Tapper, he knows his job. Stephen Miller, he knows his job. It's only going to be 6-8 minutes. Do you realize he called in security and had him taken off the set?
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think that kind of, not that we needed any more transparency, you know, to see how Jake Tapper feels about the Trump administration.
Hey, but I mean, throw this bum out in the street.
You know, that doesn't, you're absolutely right. I mean, it was very obvious, you know, where his agenda was.
But then we saw Brzezinski yesterday with Mika Joe, and she decided to end an interview with Michael Wolff, the author of Fire and Fury.
Do you regret inferring anything about Nikki Haley?
I didn't infer anything about Nikki Haley. What I inferred is that many of the people around the president believe he is still involved with various women.
No, but you said she spent a lot of time in private time with...
I mean, that's exactly what people report. And now, and specifically, that was about her bid to become the Secretary of State. She has decided to deny what she has not been accused of.
Right.
Certainly, I didn't accuse her of this.
Are you kidding? You're on the set of Morning Joe. We don't BS here.
Well, read me the language.
Are you kidding me? I'm not reading you anything.
Well, we could play the Bill Maher.
If you don't get it, if you don't get what we're talking about, I'm sorry.
This is awkward.
You're here on the set with us, but we're done. Michael Wolff, thank you. We're going to go to break now. Bye, everyone. We'll be right back.
Yeah, that's annoying. It's really annoying when they do stuff like that. I actually like Mika Brzezinski. I actually think that she does. I think she's okay. I cannot stand that kind of stuff, though. She completely just delegitimizes herself when she pulls that nonsense.
Why?
Let him speak.
You knew what he had written in the book about Haley.
Why is she getting all mad about it? Okay, so let him answer. Well, if he's going to fudge around it, or if he's going to tiptoe, or if he's going to deny it, then fine.
All right,
then
so
let
she,
the viewers call
she
him
She was
out.
Upset with what he had said recently about Nikki Haley. She's a public figure, as the president is. There's no libel. There's no slander laws involved there. And by the way,
taking it so personally.
Four years, she had the relationship with Coffee Joe while they were married, right? And that came up
allegedly.
From time to time. And I'm sure she was upset about that. But come on. If you're going to conduct an interview, let the other person make their points, and then you go at it. Well,
yeah,
I'll find out from our listeners.
Yeah, I agree with
if
that.
If they think it's all just theatrical, it's like WWE.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what's happened.
Or it's just another form of it's either my agenda, my approach, or the highway. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house. It's Paul from the Irish Riviera, Breezy Point. Welcome to WABC, Paulie.
All right. Pleasure to be here. And Curtis, may I say, I'm glad that you're in good health.
come down to Breezy and enjoy the beach.
I definitely will now, because they no longer restrict me like when I was a teenager and said, hey, where's your identity card? I don't have one. Get the hell out of here.
Don't worry. I'll make believe you're Irish. You'll get in.
Okay.
But anyway, what I wanted to talk about was, I want to ask the both of you, since you're both media experts, do you think that the media now is just really more of a gossip type of thing? Because I was thinking about, you know, how it was growing up and listening to Cronkite and listening to Huntley and Brinkley. And maybe they look like, you know, they were stiff as a board, but at least they told you the straight dope of what was going on out there. I mean, the biggest thing I saw was that Melania Trump, what she was wearing, and they were so worried that, you know, she was wearing a dress that was similar to what Hillary wrote, you know, wore. I said, you know, really? Is NBC going to spend all their time on something that stupid that doesn't mean anything? She probably just went to her closet and said, I'll take this and that's
that. With the advent of 24-hour news channels, it pretty much changed the face of journalism completely. I mean, it's very entertainment. It's all theater
so
at this point. And journalists wear their agenda like a badge of honor.
So
they wear their bias like a badge of honor.
What you're saying, it's become more like the old Morton Downey Jr. show at the old Superstation Channel 9 in
Pretty
Scarcus.
Much. When you get the security to come in and take a guy
right.
out.
Get this guy out of
what
here.
What was he going to do?
And then the audience,
what was he going to do? Start beating up the teleprompter operator? I mean, what?
But we knew that was shtick.
Completely.
You know, I made many appearances on the old Morton Downey Jr. show, but you knew that a lot of it was hype and shtick.
Well, I think it's hype and shtick now, too, honestly.
Wow. So
sad.
It's like WWE wrestling.
Yeah.
Should have Vince McMahon Jr. come on
Only
out there.
Only cable news.
And say, toss him. Hey, bring the muscle heads in here and toss him now.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host. Curtis Sliwa. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
You make me live. Oh, you're the best friend that I ever had. I've been with you such a long time. You're my sunshine, and I want you to know that my feelings are true. I really love you. Oh, you're my best friend.
Oh, I bet you this is one of your favorite groups.
No.
Well,
I mean, all right.
British. You know, you're an Anglophile.
I'm all right with it. This isn't really about best friends. It's like you and Nancy, your beautiful girlfriend, you know, you're lovers, but you're best friends.
Yeah, but she's my best friend. I mean, a lot of husbands and wives out there, they'll say it the same.
That, yes, my hubby's my best friend.
Right. So, I mean, you know, put aside the gender attraction and all that. Just if they're not your best friend, and it's just based on one thing that you're married for, whatever that thing might be, or two or
it's
three.
It's never going to work.
Exactly.
And we know.
But I like Queen. It's not one of my all-time favorite groups. But when we talk friends, I have a much better choice, and it's local. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I know you're global, you're an Anglophile.
Yes, I do. I'm an Anglophile of all Anglophiles.
Because I'll never forget, I was on the Staten Island Ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when you had to pay money. You know, this is before Rudy Giuliani decided free fare for Staten Island because they helped elect me mayor over David Dinkins. And I was amazed. I was hearing some of the best rap I've ever heard. Not rap crap. Really good stuff. And it was this song.
Friends. How many of us have them?
Friends.
Houdini from Staten Island. What they would do is to practice their rap.
Friends.
They would get on the ferry and they would provide free entertainment to everyone going back and forth while, you know, practicing in front of their audience.
Oh, so it's like, you know, the guys that you see down in the in Penn Station.
Right, right.
But I love them.
Imagine, that's the last thing you would have anticipated back then, is a free performance by really were great entertainers, Houdini.
Have you seen, so did you actually get to see them?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, this is before they really hit it big. Right, but. We're high atop Madison Square Garden in the great facilities provided by NJDiet.com. And you know what?
The goose is loose.
Oh, the Hulk is talking. Back, if you listen to Bill Evans, temperatures are going to plummet tonight. And so get ready for snow and ice and sleet and the whole nine yards. But with Super Bowl Sunday upon us, a lot of friends get together, you know, and they spend the whole day together. They might be at your house or you might be at my house, and then our other friends are together. And there's a study out. And I don't quite understand. I'm going to need you because I know you have many friends because you're a Yenta.
Well, my friendship circle has actually decreased significantly in the last year. You can add two and two together.
Well, that's because you're married now. That's because you're married now.
No, it's because you see who's loyal to you in times in times of turmoil.
Because you were involved in litigation against Fox News Channel and O'Reilly. But according to this study, best friends' brains light up when they're talking about the same things and they're agreeing.
When they're looking at the same things, too. So these researchers gave a bunch of, they hooked up a bunch of graduate students to brain scans. And the, you know, they looked at, like, let's say Joe's brain lit up when they showed a picture of the moon landing, and Susie's brain lit up when they showed a little sneak peek into somebody's wedding. Then they culled all that information and they found that the groups of friends within that graduate group all seemed to, that their little brain scans lit up at the same things, which makes sense because you tend to hang out with people that you have common interests with.
Well,
so that makes sense to me. Typically.
Like, I know you've had many friends, but I'm sure you have a best friend.
I have a couple. I have three best friends.
Okay. Would you say that study with all three best friends is a match, or that you have best friends that have different points of view that at times you're adversarial with? You're not always on the same page.
Well, I told you, my best friend Gina, she's the one who takes her kids to the marches and everything. The kids are holding the signs, the anti-Trump
last,
signs.
Right,
and
the last
everything.
Woman's march.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with that.
And the kid has the sign F Trump, right?
Well, not that vulgar, but, basically. I mean, I'm not a bit, I don't like that. That's not my thing. I don't really believe that kids should be brought into that quite yet. I mean, little kids. But, she does. And we haven't argued about it. We've talked about it. We've discussed it. I'm still, digging my foot in the ground. She's still digging hers. But overall, we pretty much have the same feeling and thoughts and likes, I'd say, pretty much across the board. And so, it's consistent with all my friends.
So the closer the friend relationship is, and especially for people who have multiple friends, the more alike the neutral patterns in parts of the brain governing emotional responses. I want to find out from our many listeners if, in fact, this is true, or maybe your best friends are adversarial towards you, especially with the contentious general election we went through.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure there were some people that did not allow that to destroy their friendship, or maybe it did if you happen to support Donald Trump to be the president.
Oh, you see what happened on Facebook.
Or Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Everybody's going crazy on Facebook. You know, everybody's, defriending and unfriending and unfollowing and all that business.
Let's open up our phone lines
today. Let's do it.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And then there's the whole subject, as we brought up initially when we introduced this subject, that I have found that many people's best friend is the person they're married to.
Well, yeah.
Husband or wife.
That's a good thing if that's the case. Now, you obviously want the romantic part of that, too, to be there. You want to feel attraction and that kind of thing. Sure. But, yeah, my husband's definitely my best friend.
But I would say over time, whereas at first when you meet and there's real electricity, it's kinetic energy between you, and you're like bunny rabbits in the sack, that wanes for a variety of reasons. You know, just the pressures of day-to-day life. Maybe somebody is not feeling too well. Or, it's sex isn't the primary reason you're together. They're really what keeps people together is their best friends are their husband or their wife, that they share with them, not just intimate things.
Yeah.
But they can't wait to be with their spouse.
Well, there's nobody that I would rather travel with than my husband. I mean, there's nobody that I want to, fly over to Italy with than John.
No, I understand, but you're a newlywed.
Yes, but I'm also, not 22 years old.
You've been married, what, 4, 5, 6 times?
No, let's say 13, just to make
all right,
it
but
fun.
Three times. So the fact is that I'm sure there were some relationships in which that wasn't your best friend.
Well, my last husband, we were pretty much best friends, and we really didn't have a lot in common. But we were very, very good. He was my guy friend. We talked about a lot, and I was getting up in in age at that time, which I thought, which I was only 37. But I thought, you know, this is the kind of guy that I should be with. I should have a best friend. You know, unfortunately, there were other things that were lacking.
Would you, but, since you've always had a series of other best friends who were women,
mm-hmm.
did you find that you could talk to the women or wanted to talk to the women differently than your very best friend who was your husband?
Not really. I mean, if I talk to them about different things, it's basically because my husband just wouldn't be interested in something. But no, I can talk to my husband pretty much. He's a cool, he's one of these, you know, very kind of dudes that sort of will listen to my girl chick
chat.
So
he hasn't gotten to the point in your relationship, which I've certainly been at, where the lady that I was either sharing an apartment with or a living space.
You were sharing her with somebody. I was like, whoa, kinky.
No, I'm not freaky deaky. But the point was that when we were sharing living before getting married,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you're first together, you're paying attention to one another.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, if you've been with one another for a while, especially guys, the woman is talking and the guy's saying, yeah. And
no.
then the woman will ask you a ridiculous thing that you would never be saying yeah to and catch you because you're just placating her. You're just... That's, hoping that she'll shut her mouth and won't talk anymore, so you just yes it to death.
See, that's a typical guy. That's a typical thing. Yes, you're right. It's typically that the woman is doing the chirping.
Yes.
But in my situation, my husband does the chirping, and I told you this. Sometimes I'm on my phone and because my husband talks a lot. Anybody that has met him, he's a talker. I mean, I thought I was. He's a talker. So yeah, sometimes I don't mean to do it, but I think I do tend to tune him out sometimes. But he's an absolutely riveting and wonderful person.
So you end up taking the male role, in which yes, dear.
And sometimes I won't even answer him.
Right, and then he throws something into the mix in which you're not paying attention.
No, and lately his thing is just can you pay attention to me, please?
And you've been married how long now on this? Your fourth,
it's
fifth,
our
sixth marriage?
It's 6 months.
What? 6 months?
Yeah.
And you're
no,
already in that
way.
Situation.
But I've always been this way.
So you're fickle.
No, I'm not.
You have attention deficit disorder.
No, I don't. No, I don't. No, you know what it is?
Yes.
When he gets home, I'm already home usually.
Right.
And I'm reading. And I'm you know, I read like voraciously. And
yeah.
I'm into my books. They're always, you know, the British royalty. The, you know, I'm into that kind of stuff. Russia, Bolshevik Revolution. I love all that kind of stuff. And I'm so into it that I have a hard time pulling myself away from it. When he walks in, you know, I definitely have noticed myself.
So you're not good at multitasking, reading the book, but also being responsive to his questions or his inquiries.
Usually, I'll put the book down the second he comes home, and I hug him and I give him a kiss, and then he loves to make dinner. Thank God.
Oh,
he also
God.
Likes to clean. He's perfect.
What kind of a Maytag
he
is?
Of the best is what he is.
How is he a man's man?
He's an amazing cook.
He puts the apron on.
He's OCD, so he can't stand it when I try to do the dishes. So I just give up. I eat my dinner that
so
he's cooked for me, and I put
like
my feet up, and I'm
he's
like...
He's like a Felix Unger
cigarette?
Of The Odd Couple. You know, he's meticulous,
he is
neat freak.
Perfect, because I'm the antithesis of that. I'm a slob, and he is...
So you're the slob Slabinski.
Ugh, completely.
You're like Oscar Madison,
yep,
right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And what kind of a cook is he? I mean...
He's fantastic. He's just a great cook.
So what do you do in the relationship? You just sit on your ass
and
read
what don't
books?
I do? No, I'm very loving and wonderful.
I
and
mean, do you even get a sponge and like wash down the counter?
He doesn't want me to. He hates it. He's very into
God,
even
dude.
If I did a sponge thing, he would hate the way I did the, you know, the swirling.
Oh, so he's a perfectionist.
Yeah, he's really OCD.
And very anal.
Yes,
wow.
About that stuff. But it's awesome.
So, but he treats you
cleaning.
Like a princess because of that obsession of his.
Well, yeah, I guess he does. But I also am very, I'm a very attentive, loving, you know, I'm constantly
yeah,
telling him how much I love him.
That's
I know, right?
Sure.
No,
wow.
But we also, I'm a huge, you know, music fan and rock
no,
and metal, so we're
understand.
Constantly
still,
doing that stuff.
He does the chores.
What don't, what
and
do
not because
I do?
It's like, it's forced labor because
well,
you...
Well, why don't you call him and ask him what I do? I don't know.
No, I know, but, you know, some guys, they become a Maytag
because... God, I feel horrible now.
They got caught with a gumada, so, you know,
no,
they're always making up to their old lady.
No.
And he's a cook.
He's an amazing cook.
So I'm wondering, what do you do in this relationship?
I just exist in my charming little way.
Let me open up the phone lines on that. I'm believing your husband is a real Maytag.
Oh, God. 1-800. My husband's awesome.
He makes it horrible for the rest of us.
He really does.
Who won't do any chores.
I could never, ever be with anybody but him. He is perfect.
Who will never go perfect, near a skillet. Who can barely turn on, you know, the gas stove to even just make themselves tea.
But how do you think I feel? Because I'm like, when is he going to get really sick of this? When is he going to get sick of me being just existing with my charm? And that's pretty
much
it.
When he realizes you're a natural born yenta, and he starts, in the hours that he sleeps, he hears your haunting voice.
I entertain
voice.
Him. He will say that. I make him laugh.
Now, he looks in his pictures like he's macho. But when all of a sudden you've been nattering away, he will become very nebbishy and
schlubby. Oh, no, God, no. Oh, jeez.
Over time. His gonads will shrink.
Oh, no, my friend.
All of a sudden, he'll be a eunuch.
No. The two of us, no, we are the yellers. We're the yelly yellersons.
Let me open up the phone lines. We've learned more about you than we need to know.
Yes, you have.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's quickly go to Carmine, who's calling from Edgewater. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Carmine.
Thank you, Curtis. You talk about every subject. I love hearing you guys.
Hi. So what's your thought, whole thing?
I was thinking that, you know, the level of honesty is important. The fact that you get along really well with your husband because he, fills a necessary gap in your life, you know? Think in those terms, that he makes you guys whole because he does think possibly that, you know, you feel more confident with him handling, and he's fine with whoever you are.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing I will say. He's never tried to change me. He thinks that I'm perfect and
Carmine,
not perfect.
Carmine,
but
the guy, right? Her husband gives her manicures, pedicures.
No, he doesn't.
He massages
he
doesn't. Her
footsies. No, he doesn't. He's terrible at massaging. It's the worst. God. Ugh, does it for 2 seconds, and he's like, oh, my hand's cramping.
But I wanted to add one other thing. I have a girlfriend, and I do not discuss my other girlfriend with her.
Oh, that's good of you.
I just wanted to throw that in there to make you know that it's, I'm calling.
I know, but Carmine, that's what we call self-survival. If you started talking about your other girlfriend, because you're not married, obviously, you're not getting engaged, but if you start mentioning another woman while you're seeing this woman, man, all hell is going to break
loose.
Yeah,
you'd have your face scratched if you were with me.
But I just wanted to let you know that does exist out there as
Carmine,
well.
Carmine, let me tell you what, and you're Italian, right, Carmine?
Ever since I was a little boy.
Okay, so if you did this to an Italian-American woman, right, you started to discuss, you know, hey, there's Angela, you know, there's Victoria, right? Next thing you know, she'd be slashing your tires and urinating in the back of your car so that you'd have to smell that every time you got into the car. Trust
God.
Me. I know all about that.
Oh, my God. What?
Why?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
I never had a car when I was an adult. Teenager, yeah. Rocket Olds, 88. But I didn't have girls in the car. No.
Okay,
no,
so where did you get that story?
That's when I was a speed freak.
Where did that story just come up?
My aunts. God vengeance.
Oh,
one in particular, Aunt Louise.
Goodness.
Man, she was vicious.
That's brutal.
And I actually had to be in the back of that car.
Oh, God.
After her boyfriend got her, let's just say, her blowback. And I had to hold my nose when he drove me all the way from Canarsie to Howard Beach along the Bell Parkway. I said, what stinks here? He goes,
Curtis.
Oh, it's Jamaica Bay. I said, no, pal, it ain't Jamaica Bay. I smell it back here. And then I found out the real story. 1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
The officer Grumpy were very upset. We never had the love that every child ought to get. We ain't no delinquents, we're misunderstood. Deep down inside us, there is good.
There is good.
There is good. There is good. There is untapped.
Oh, this was so good, West Side Story. Sharks versus Jets.
You know, I never saw West Side Story.
Oh, you have to. And especially the guy who played Officer Crumkey, because he reminded me of the old Irish cops who would give me an attitudinal readjustment, a concrete fascia, and a wooden shampoo.
Well-deserved, I'm sure.
And a lot of times, they would be hiding in the shadows of the subway station, whether in uniform or undercover. usually in a work stall, you know, for one of the MTA guys with the mop and the bug, and they'd be looking out. And then all of a sudden, you'd hear the train, the subway train coming into the station. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of young guys, they'd be standing around, you know, and then all of a sudden they hear the train coming in. And they would jump over the turnstile, go under the turnstile like it was the Irish sweepstakes, or go through the emergency door. And there would be Officer Krumpke going, "Hey, where do you guys think you're going? I want to see ID right now." And then you're up against the wall. And depending on your attitude, he'd either write you out a ticket. He really didn't want to do that. Or he'd take out the daisy chain perp chain. And you'd be walking into a paddy wagon that had been sent there, and you'd get locked up, and you'd disappear for maybe 72 hours.
Jumping a turnstile?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Theft of service. Mm-hmm. Fare evasion, they called it. So this is what has happened. As you know, I am an enemy of Cyrus White Shoes fans. I'm still waiting for you to indict Harvey Weinstein, but knowing that will never happen under your watch. About, I think it was in September, he had a press conference, and he said, "We are no longer going to prosecute fare evasion turnstile jumpers. We're not going to prosecute it if they get locked up. They won't go to arraignment." Okay. So the idea was, like everything else that's been downgraded in the de Blasio information, you know, if you pull out your three-piece set and you decide to all of a sudden use your male member as a hose right in the middle, you don't get locked up any longer for urinating in the street or the park. They give you a ticket, as they do with a lot of other offenses in which you used to get locked up.
Just a nuisance fine, basically.
But now the NYPD has said, "Wait a second, Vance. If you're not going to let us lock them up when we catch him, fare evading, jumping the turnstile, we're not even going to bother to write him a ticket. Because why should we get into some huge argument when they know we can't lock them up?"
Yeah, it's completely pointless.
Right. Just to write them a ticket, and they never have the right ID. You know, they're always fumbling and saying, "Is that really your name? How come you have like four aliases in this wallet? You know, which one are we going to write the ticket to? Oof." And meantime, the guy is fidgeting. He starts talking trash to the cop. And the next thing you know, it's an all-out physical altercation. So the NYPD has said, "Guess what, Cyrus White Shoes fans? If we don't have the option of locking them up," because normally a cop, what will happen is they look at you if you fold like a cheap camera. "Yes, sir. No, ma'am." You know, you're very respectful. A lot of times they'll just write you out the ticket as long as they could check your ID and let you go. Mm-hmm. But if they have a sense, street smart sense, you may have priors, you didn't pay your child support, or maybe you're carrying a tool or a weapon because they want to pat you down. I can't tell you how many arrests they've made. Because guys are so stunned, they're so stupid, that instead of paying $2.75, right, to ride the subway, they got the gun on them. "I ain't paying no money, $2.75. They jumped the turnstile, they get clipped, they may have had priors, they go away 5 to 7 years because they violated their parole because they got caught with a gun simply because they wouldn't pay the $2.75 to ride the subway.
Okay, so how are things changing?
Well, now the cops are saying, "We're not even going to write them tickets."
So we're basically, I mean, just entertaining.
Only Manhattan.
Okay, so
right now,
in Manhattan, so basically they're going to hear this. People just rich, poor, you know, black,
hipsters,
white, young, old. Yeah, where they're going to hear this.
Street dudes.
So now everybody's just going to be popping over the turnstile. Why would I go and buy? Why would I go and spend my money, which, by the way, I don't have a lot of these days.
Right.
And if I jump over the turnstile, what's
right,
a big deal?
Especially
if nothing's going to happen to me.
Especially if you begin to see that others are just walking through the gate, because now they won't
have
to go. They won't have to go under the turnstile or over the turnstile. They just walk right through the gate, bogart everybody.
I don't understand this. This makes no sense to me. Are we just going to stop having people pay for?
Is Cyrus White Shoes Vance, who is a pretentious a-hole, and you know, of the selected classes, says, because this is being targeted on youth of color, poor and impoverished young men and young women, who are the predominant numbers that bogart the fare. And I'm saying, do you realize, and that is true, it's mostly young people of color, but if others are watching them not pay their fare,
it doesn't matter if you're black, white, or purple.
It's like when people do shoplifting.
Yeah,
right. It's not just poor people who do shoplifting. Look, they just busted a Rockefeller.
Everybody wants a deal. This sounds like a great deal.
Noma Ryder, remember she
Winona Ryder.
Whatever.
Noma Ryder.
She was like a kleptomaniac, you know.
Yeah, she's redeemed herself.
But she's not alone. Ladies and gentlemen, what do you think of this brainiac idea of Cyrus White Shoes Vance, who says no arrests for fare evasion for bogarting paying $275 for a one-way ride?
Insane.
And the NYPD saying in retaliation, well, guess what? We're not writing tickets either.
Well, then what? I'm just, honestly, I'm going to jump up. I mean, I'm still fairly, you know, mobile.
Well, let's find out. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Do a little jump.
That's 1-800-848-9222.
Pilates.
Let's go to Dutch, who's calling from Connecticut. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Dutch.
Hey, brother, you're sounding strong. Great to hear.
Thank you.
I'm feeling a lot better. A lot better, Dutch.
That's awesome. And Ms. Huddy, if you don't mind my saying, it went unnoticed last week, but there was a gentleman who called in who was really nasty, and I knew he really riled you up, and you handled it with tremendous class and
aplomb. Wait, when I said I hate you after he hung up? I don't know if that was so classy.
I think there's a lot more you really wanted to say.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot more said when you got on break, too, but that's not here nor there.
I'm used to it. So what's your whole thought about this?
I'll tell you what. I remember when I lived in the city when Giuliani was mayor, and the quality of life crimes that were prosecuted, the city was never cleaner, more efficient. The tourists were great. Everyone was happy. They wanted to be in the city. Now under de Blasio and with Vance here, it's like one flew over the cuckoo's nest. I took my kid into the city about 2 weeks ago, and we were in the food court in Grand Central Station downstairs, and it was like Dante's waiting room down there. It was unbelievable.
And you're so right.
People, mental patients, and my kid was scared, and like you had that feeling of there was just a feeling like something could happen at any moment.
Yeah,
and look, at some point, tourists aren't going to want to come to the city if it's nasty and you got hooligans, you got all the nonsense going on. And then they're going to start complaining, oh, no one's coming to the city. Now rents are falling and everything else.
Now, Dutch, you're so right about Grand Central. They recently put up a little demonstration for, like, a squash tournament, which is very high level.
Mm-hmm.
Meantime, you go down to the food court. Don't dare go into the bathrooms because, my God.
Oh, good God.
It not only stink, half the sinks and the toilets and urinals don't work. The poor women, they're like lined up around the food court.
Oh, well, welcome to women's life. That's
and
typical.
You're right. It's like like zombies in Dawn of the Dead, the homeless, the emotionally disturbed. And the stink that causes.
Well, I mean, you've got people bathing in there. You've got mentally ill. There are people walking around in hospital gowns who've clearly just like walked out of Bellevue. And they're like, all right, yeah, we'll go here.
Yeah.
I mean, and it used to be like, I mean, it was a nice, like Grand Central.
Yeah.
Was a nice train station. It was a nice food court. You're like, you know what? I don't mind eating
more
here.
Penn Station, Grand Central, the Port Authority.
I don't really mind Penn Station, I have to say, but I haven't been to Grand Central.
It's
in a while.
Third world station. Anyway, let's go to Brian in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Brian,
what's up, Curtis? Listen, I didn't believe this myself. I heard it this morning. Right, I take the A train. You know, I have to get off on High Street. I take the A train, and I hate to sound like racist or anything. But a bunch of black kids are sitting there saying, and they were all construction workers. We ain't got to pay for the train no more. Did you see what they said? We don't have to worry about paying for the train no more. And the kids said, yeah, that's more money in my pocket for weed now.
Yeah, well, Brian, let me tell you how the MTA runs their trains. So, like, the A train is considered one of the slowest service trains in the system. The L train, the best. Every 2 minutes, the hipster and millennial express. Because hipsters and millennials, they pay. You know, they're terrified, that they might get locked up. And then a call goes home to mommy or daddy in Idaho or Montana or Iowa, you know. So they pay. So if you notice, the L train is always running on time. The A train is not, because if you go to a lot of the stations, this goes into East New York. Naturally, Broadway Junction, East New York, is the main area. But you go to Rockaway. You go to Franklin Avenue. There are people like jumping like there's no tomorrow. You wonder if half the people have even paid. And so, as a result, you get less service.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point. I heard that point earlier today by Justin Love.
1-800-848-WABC.